we are back with episode 790 of The Critical Myth. I'm John, your host, and tonight we have...
This is Gary from Jacksonville. Wait, you said 790, not 290? I've been doing this way too long.
You and me both. It's almost like we've been doing this for 17 years or longer. And maybe we just need to come to a conclusion for all this now.
There's got to be an end somewhere.
There's got to be an end. All right, well, we're going to be talking about a few things this week. Obviously, our week's worth of episodic discussion will come later down the road, but first we're going to have some headline stories, some movies that we've seen, as well as some news items. But before we do any of that, I definitely think we need a spoiler warning, if we haven't already spoiled enough.
Oh, you silly people, you. Of course we're going to talk about it. We're going to talk about it. That and the other thing, too, because as we discuss our different shows and in particularly this week movies, we're going to let go with all the spoilers. If you were upset when Wash died, well, we're going to tell you about other people dying today, too. So hold on. It's going to be a fun ride, and we hope you enjoy some of our discussion points.
That's right, and we are going to be starting off actually with some movie news, so definitely not movie news, movie discussion. So I actually feel like you really need to double down on that spoiler warning, people.
Okay, yeah.
Have not seen Logan. Skip about half this episode.
Yes, and then come back and listen later because you're going to love it. But
that's right, exactly.
But yeah, just it's not our intention to spoil it, but we really want to go into detail, and we're going to have to reveal things as we go along, and that's the way it is.
Right. So this is probably going to be a bit of a movie-centric episode. Next time, then, we'll probably have about news and some episodic discussion and then wrap things up in our third show this week. So a little bit shorter shows this week, by the way, because we are experiencing both technical difficulties and temporal difficulties in terms of... it's late on a Sunday night. We're starting to record. So, yeah, these are going to be shorter shows. All right. Go ahead and jumping in with Logan and Gary, just initial impressions.
Well, I want to give it just a hint of a backstory quick, being the comic geek of the show. Marvel had an idea that they wanted all their best writers to write the last story for superheroes. So they came up with one called Old Man Logan, and or at least that's what the title eventually became. And it was supposed to be the last Wolverine story. It was originally how they played it, the last Hulk story, the last Wolverine story, etc. It morphed into... to the Logan story. And while I can't say they were 100% accurate, I felt this movie captured it amazingly well. They gave the sense of a tired but not defeated person who was not quite at that level of power and influence that he had been in his younger years that we're used to reading of the comics. The inclusion of Professor Xavier in the story, I thought, was very interesting and definitely gave reason for Logan to be hanging around, much as Chuck, as he sometimes call him, had helped him through his problems. He was now reciprocating the favor, and you can draw parent-child analogies, I suppose, if you'd like, and they're definitely there to draw. I just didn't want to focus on them that much. But I thought it was really good. This was not a high-tech epic. I really don't even feel it was a superhero movie. As I dwelled on it more and more, running it through in my head, it was the story about, in a large extent, family, both family you knew and family you discovered, and what you're willing to do for these loved ones. And in that way, as I think about it, it really was the whole focus of the movie. And this was not a superhero movie. There were superheroes, there were supervillains, but this wasn't a superhero movie. Did you get that sense too, John? I mean, at least that's
actually
what I felt.
Yeah, I was actually trying to describe this to some people because they were like, oh, hey, you saw Logan finally. And, some people were like, oh, I'm not really a huge X-Men superhero film fan. And I was kind of left with, this might actually be your kind of movie then. Because I know a lot of people that went to the movie saying, oh, I was expecting this to be more like, one of the other Wolverine movies or something. And they're watching this movie and they're getting drawn into what is really just a character study. There are some superhero elements, but you don't need to know anything about the other X-Men movies. You could go into this kind of blind and you'll get everything that you need right out of the film, because it really is about somebody finding that, as you said, that familial connection and even redemption to a certain degree. So they do have to throw a lot of stuff out the window. Although, of course, if you have been watching the X-Men film since the very first one, this movie is really the capstone for that. And that's what's surprising to me, is that they capstone the X-Men franchise in a movie that's not an X-Men movie. Which may actually be more fitting for the X-Men franchise than anything else. But Yeah, it. By the time I got to the end, I really felt like they could never make another X-Men movie again, and I think I would be okay with it. Because this brought it to a conclusion. This really was, like, you figure that movie came out in 2000. This is really a long journey that you are finally coming to the end to. And Wolverine was the kind of, like, central figure of that. It really was. Xavier and Wolverine were the two big characters in the first X-Men movie. It makes perfect sense for it to end full circle here.
And, you know, just as a side note, there is a, I want to say about a 20-year buffer, though, from, or in this case, 30-year buffer between the last X-Men movie, Apocalypse, and this Wolverine story. So there still is, you know, ample time to tell other X-Men stories, and I don't think this is the last X-Men story by any means. So
I don't think it will be either.
And I think they hedged their bets by pushing it out. I want to say it was 2049 or something like that. So given that the last X-Men movie was supposed to, I believe, roughly coincide with the 80s, that we still have a few stories left. It's time to tell a few more stories in the X-Men universe. But I like the idea that they did push it out so that they didn't have to worry about any immediate conflicts with recent history or anything like that. It's the leap ahead is often a very nice story mechanism, and I think they used it well in this story to sort of separate and distance. And while we only got tidbits and hints, we really still don't know how we got to this 2049. Even at the end of the story, we don't know.
You really don't. You get these little hints and allegations throughout the movie, as you were saying, Gary. I mean, that was one of the big questions that we had coming out of the film was, you know, how did they get here? How did they get to this point? And you get this sense, and it's actually fairly tragic. I kind of love it. This whole idea that, you know, Xavier, you know, they say at some point that, oh, no new mutants have come along, and they haven't figured out why. And, of course, later they reveal that it was actually, you know, what's the way to put this? I guess the villain of the piece is basically the one responsible for that.
Yes.
So it's artificial. So it's not as though it has to be that way. It's just that's the way that it is now. Yes. And then you, of course, had the existing mutants, and you sit back and go, well, what happened to them? And you find out in these little tidbits here and there that basically Xavier himself killed them off. And I think that's pretty much what they said.
Brilliant.
Yeah. Because it just makes it all so, it just like double, triples, whatever word you want to use, down on this whole idea of redemption in the film is just that Xavier was the one who basically warned the world, hey, there are these mutants and I'm going to make a mutant refuge and everything's going to be great. And he's the one responsible for killing off practically all of them.
Well, also don't forget too that they also switched the blame because in the comic book, Wolverine was the one that did it. Mm-hmm. And that was the weight he was carrying at that point. So, you know, it was interesting that they chose to shift the blame also and bring bring Xavier in as the Deus Ex Machina. I never pronounced that right.
Deus Ex Machina.
Thank you. Yes, that or the MacGuffin. I'll go with it.
Doesn't matter.
Yeah. So they chose to make him the MacGuffin and take that part of the weight off Wolverine. I guess maybe they felt he had so much on him already that would be overkill. So, no pun intended with Wolverine.
Yeah, well, with him being responsible for Xavier himself to a certain degree and taking that on, and that, oh, God, the interaction between the two of them is just heart-wrenching. When you remember, and they call back to the first film, and they remind you that, Wolverine and Xavier really did have this kind of special relationship. And for Xavier to turn to him on several occasions and basically say, you're just this massive disappointment.
Oh, jeez.
It was nothing, just like...
Yeah, nothing like a father figure dumping that on you.
Right. It definitely plays to that whole thing. And then for, you know, Xavier at the one point to basically say, stop and look around. This is what a normal family is like. You know, soak it in. And just trying to give him, like, even with all the stuff about the disappointment, Xavier basically doing everything in his power to reunite Wolverine with his quote-unquote daughter. Yeah, this film just, like you said, it's not a superhero film.
Oh, not at all. It's a family piece is really what it is. It's a family drama.
Oh, yeah.
If you took all you have to do is take away the claws and the mental power show, and yeah, it could easily transcend genres from, you know, sci-fi back into just to a standard drama.
Now, let's see. What What did you think of the portrayal of Laura in this particular version of the story, I guess you could say?
The daughter?
Yeah.
I don't know. I just I liked the concept of her, the actual actress's portrayal of her, or just the way she's in.
Oh, because there wasn't a whole lot for the actress to do.
No, there wasn't. I enjoyed this idea that two things. One is that the villain was still using all the mutant DNA to actually create new mutants, even though they had pretty much stifled them from the general population. I thought that was interesting. I found it odd that Logan attached that much to her just because somebody had pumped her up with Logan DNA. I could see if it was wanting to help it, but the movie really portrayed it like he had this deep emotional connection with her, and that seemed a little bit forced.
A little bit. I can't disagree with you on that. The only thing that I kind of let it go for, or the reason that I let it go, was that I got the sense that he knew he was dying from the very beginning. I mean, you do not go into this movie. If you go in completely not knowing anything, you do not go like 2 minutes into this movie without completely knowing how this is going to end. There's no doubt. They don't even pretend that this is going to go well. It's kind of brutal in that sense. And I really got the sense that he ultimately got to the point where he knew that his last chances were slipping away, that it was just not going to end well. And this was his legacy. And that's where I feel like they were trying to go with this, because you're right. There's no way they could establish in the space of a week that kind of bond. Although I will say, when she at the end pulled the daddy card, oh man, that killed off about half the audience there.
Like I said, if it had stuck at like sort of Wolverine trying to be a do-gooder, so to speak, I thought I would have been fine with that level of attachment. Like, oh geez, this kid's got, you know, the mother's dead, the kid's in a screwed up life, let me, you know, I'm gonna help him no matter what, would have been good. But the whole tack on parent vibe just seemed a little it seemed forced to me. So your mileage may vary, but that was probably one of my few flaws, that I wish they did keep it just a little slightly impersonal. This, you know, the way that they were playing it was like the kid was taken from Wolverine, like when it was born or something, and it was obviously nothing like that. So even though they almost portrayed it as such, I had this sense when the woman was trying to track him down, it was almost like, I have your child.
And, right.
but we later find out that is specifically not the case. So that was as I said, it was a bit.
I do agree with that. But given the shorthand of the film, I don't know that they could have really that they necessarily wanted to avoid that. I really feel like they wanted there to be that. See, if they really wanted to just make it, oh hey, it's just another mutant that has your DNA, they probably would have cast the part older and gone with the slightly more teenage, you know, vamp up a little bit type of thing. But they very intentionally went with a kid that was just old enough to kind of hold her own, especially in the fight scenes, but was young enough that it would kind of like instinctually make you feel like, no, this is a kid trying to find a parent figure. And they really found that kind of balance, I thought, because she was just this, you know, one of my favorite moments. She's mute through most of the movie, and then she just unloads on the guy in Spanish. And he's just like, what?
We've been going through all this stuff and you're just,
yes, and now you won't shut up. So let's see. Anything else to really say, or any other aspect of this? Because it is interesting to say that because it's not a huge superhero movie, while there are definitely sci-fi elements to it, those are largely just servicing the plot. I am curious, what did you think of the de-aging CGI in this movie?
It didn't bother me. I was okay with it. You can see it was there, but at the same time, I don't think it pulled me out of the story. So that's usually sort of where I draw the line with CGI. If I can keep going along and not go, oh, that's horrible, I'm usually okay. But, I did like how, Patrick Stewart was really able to sort of let loose a little bit. When he's playing Professor Xavier, he's always so, kept and in control that I kind of liked watching him go loose a little bit during this movie. I thought that was a lot of fun. So I'm trying to think, was there anything else? I enjoyed some of the extra characters that they pulled in from the comic books. Caliban was a really nice unexpected mutant to have in. And then Donald Pierce actually is from the all the way back in the Byrne era, back in the early 80s. So he was a nice character to see brought back as well. I think they did a fair bit of homages to the comic books, and I always enjoy those. And I got the sense that even though Wolverine died, it wasn't like he ever gave up. So I was happy that it sort of ended with that sentiment.
Yeah, it really did. I think that they lingered on that just long enough to drive it home, but then they didn't overdo it too much. They did the Shane thing, which, again, if you didn't figure out in the first few minutes that this was going to end with him dying, by the time they pulled the Shane card, it was just, oh, no, come on, really? You're going to pull that. Okay. For a certain generation, that was the one that, everybody knew. But yeah, it definitely is not your standard superhero film. I greatly recommend it. Highly recommend it. It is easily the best of the three Wolverine films by all means.
It's the only Well, it's almost not even a Wolverine film. As I said at my opening statements, this is not a superhero picture. Don't go to see that. Don't wait for the for the credits to come up at the end. It ain't going to happen. Nope. It's not that movie. So,
I say that it's a Wolverine movie because out of the three, I think this is the most brutal and violent in terms of the actual showing him using the claws the way that you always kind of expected he would do.
There were a lot of headshots, yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Literally.
There was none of this, let's just, show him slashing and everything's fine and you don't see the aftermath. No, you see the aftermath. In fact, there are many moments that you see exactly what it looks like when you've been slashed up by these things. It's not pretty. Both his and Laura's. gotta love that foot spike. But that's where I say it's definitely, if you're looking for the film where you actually see Wolverine being, what you expect from the comics, this is probably the closest you're ever going to get, which is ironic with the fact that he's old and beat up and barely functional, and yet he's more Wolverine in this film than he was in the other two that are, solo movies. But this was also the one that I felt like they actually managed to nail the third act on, so.
Yes, they did, yeah.
Yeah, so that's something the other two films kind of blew, so. Although many would say that X-Men Origins didn't have any of the three acts that worked. So that's that's a different problem altogether. I definitely give this high marks, both as a Wolverine film, as one of the more artful superhero films or films in the genre. Like you said, don't expect to go from Apocalypse and have that be what you see here. This is a very different kind of character study. This is exactly, I have to say, this is kind of what I feel like they really needed to do. With this franchise, we've said before, they should be replicating what they do with the Marvel Cinematic Universe, where each film in solo film has a little bit of a different feel to it. This is the polar opposite of Deadpool. But it is essentially the same kind of idea of breaking the mold. Because I don't think they could make another film like this in the X-Men universe. This is a very specific moment, and I think that it captures something pretty powerful. So I have to say, yeah, you're absolutely right. You've been saying it from the start of our discussion. This is not... You don't go into this movie trying to see whiz-bang mutant effects and all this kind of stuff. You'll see a few, but this is more about the characters.
Yes, and it is not I would not say you walk out of this movie feeling good.
No.
It is not a...
No. This is going to linger with you a little bit, which is, I think, is good. It's exactly what it should do. And like I said earlier on, if you've been watching the X-Men films and all these films since the very first one when it came out, and then you watch this, you feel the weight of those years. And you feel like, no, this, you completely understand why Hugh Jackman and Patrick Stewart basically said, we're not playing these characters anymore. Because this is it. This is the end. This makes sense for this to be the end. And it's brutal, and it's kind of horrific, but it's the end.
Yes.
Now, the one question I do have for you, Gary, as we try and get a little bit away from the darkness of this film, because it's pretty dark. They keep talking about this New Mutants movie. And as I was kind of thinking after watching this, I was telling myself, you know what? I'm curious. Are they going? Have we heard anything about the movie that would suggest that maybe the New Mutants is going to be after this? Because I could kind of see that being the case.
Yeah. No, I would like that, and it definitely seemed like it was a setup to for that. So.
Mm-hmm. And it would make sense for them to do the whole Demon Bear-esque story arc with, if these were the characters, based upon the fact that they are kind of an unusual bunch, to say the least. If it was a follow-up, it makes more sense than if they were trying to just come at it from, you know, out of nowhere and introduce characters and then have them go through the Demon Bear saga. If they do it with these characters who already have an established origin, that would make sense. To me, a little more sense. But yeah, I'm now curious. Maybe that's why they've been cagey about the New Mutants movie, because it's going to be after Logan, and that might actually work as a, you know, that might kind of temper a little bit of the darkness of this film, although it will always be a very dark chapter in the overall story. But to be honest with you, I don't know what the hell they're doing with the X-Men movies these days, so it could be a standalone thing.
Well,
in a different time point, but it would make sense to me if they were to follow up with that these were the New Mutants. I mean, they literally said this is the new generation of mutants. So
I know, it just seemed like, well, I guess, you know, society was reasonably in place, and it's you know, for the little fringes of it that we did see in the movie. So I guess maybe they can make that work. I was always hoping that they wouldn't necessarily, you know, that it would be sort of more contemporaneous with the X-Men. I always enjoyed the New Mutants X-Men sort of crossovers, and I personally love the whole what team does Kitty Pryde belong on saga that went on for several months. Since they really don't have her as an X-Men, I guess that wouldn't play either. It's interesting you talk about the Demon Bear saga, and I'm just trying to think of, I suppose that would fit, but Danny Moonstar seemed to have a really close connection with that, and so they'd have to introduce that pretty early on and hard to make that carry the whole movie.
I agree. I think that there's a few things they'd have to do, and that's why I say they'd at least have a little bit of a head start here. They could probably establish one of those characters as Danny if they wanted to.
Yeah.
It wouldn't be that hard. But, we'll see where they go. Certainly they've made some very odd choices with the X-Men franchise over the years. So, anyhow, let's see. Where does that kind of put us? Sorry. Not too bad. Okay, so, Gary, you also saw another movie recently.
Yes, I did. I saw the remake of Beauty and the Beast. I just saw that recently. And my wife says I'm too negative, so let me focus on the positive on this movie.
I'm sorry, that's got to be our influence.
Yes, she said it was. Yes. That was said as well. Anyway, I thought I thought that Emma Watson did a, because Emma Thompson is in it as well. But Emma Watson, I thought, did a very nice job in the movie. The acting was very good. It's a hard role because I can honestly say that with a few variations, if you saw the original cartoon movie, you pretty much got the main gist of it. There were they did reprise several songs along the way with some new songs introduced as well. And with the exception of the opening song, I enjoyed them all, both the old and the new. It was well done. It appeared to me that she sang her own songs, and I'd have to go back and check on that, but I thought she did a reasonable job of doing it. The actor who played the Beast did a very good job too. Lots of CGI work on him when he was in Beast mode. It wasn't practical effects, which I suppose did allow them more flexibility, but I almost wish that they had managed to go ahead and use old school techniques. I think that would have been stayed true. There was a lot of CGI. All the familiar characters that you're familiar with, such as, you know, Lumiere, the candelabra, Clodsworth, the clock, were all done. Everything was done CGI. Mrs. Potts and Chip, all CGI. And it was just a little bit too much CGI. Not that the CGI was bad, but it just was always there. And you almost don't expect in a low-tech world like this to, I don't know, it takes me out a little bit when you see that much of it, when they, you know, when they're showing these gorgeous sort of castles and the clothing seems all, you know, seems to be real. And it just, and then you see, have all these CGI characters thrown into it. Then oddly enough, the comedy sidekick, who you are almost always used to actually being CGI, was not CGI at all. And was a real person. The guy who does the voice for the snowman in Frozen, his name escapes me, but he played Gaston's sort of sidekick, if you will, or his, what is it? Anyway, I'm going for something that I'm not going to get to. So, but basically he played the comedy sidekick of it and he was, real. So, a little twist on the story. And of course, as I said, tracked very close to the original movie that came out. I liked it. I don't feel it's a must see by any means, but, as I said, Emma Watson was really good in it. They did do some original twists and turns on it. Some I agreed with, some I sort of scratched my head at. But it is a different animal than a cartoon feature, so they can't necessarily track it exactly. I liked it. I wasn't checking my watch at all, and it was a which is to me it means I'm not bored by the film. So I liked it, and I thought she did a very nice job in it. This is not a job where a Belle character is not a. And I'll get in trouble for this. It doesn't have to be a knock dead, gorgeous sort of starlet type of figure, meaning, you know, like your typical, I guess I'll use the term, pinup girl kind of thing to carry this role. You don't want that at all. You want someone that's just a little bit more plain, I'll say, or at least down to home, down to earth a little bit more. And she captured that very well. Surprise was Kevin Kline played Belle's father, and he was remarkably good in the role. A lot of times I feel his roles are sort of tongue-in-cheek and very slapsticky in their delivery, but he came across very heartfelt and honest in the film, and that was a very nice surprise for me. So overall, the special effects still were phenomenal. The story was about what I thought. The songs were good, but not amazing. And if you do like Beauty and the Beast, I recommend it. You won't walk away feeling gypped or, oh God, they screwed that up really bad. If you expect this to be some sort of movie that's going to redefine the film, no.
So this sounds like what it is, and like most of these live-action Disney movies, it seems like what it is that it's a good nostalgia type of thing.
Well, I don't know.
It kind of gives it a little bit of a spin because it's live-action.
I suppose, but I thought they did a much better job, for example, in Cinderella.
Okay.
I thought that live action came across, as compared to the original, so to speak, came across much better than the original of this movie comparison to that movie. The Cinderella, I really felt they did an exceptional job and made it its own film. This one is achingly reminiscent of the original one.
Ah, okay. So they really kind of
went with that. Now, I'm not going to say they went to the extent of like a Watchmen movie where they're literally copying frame per frame.
That was what I was about to ask, was that was...
All the time. All the time. But, oh, there were some frames, yes. There were... I felt that roughly, I'd say, around a third was a direct pull, so...
Yeah, and I wonder if that's really the problem with some of these live-action adaptations, because they're literally doing one that seems of everything.
Well, it made over 170 plus million in its opening weekend, John. It's not... that's a lot of money. So
I don't think they're going anywhere.
People want to see it, yeah. And like I said, it wasn't horrible fare by any means. It just, as I look back at some of the live action, if you want to exclude Maleficent, because that was really a new story, right. Even though you can say it was based on Sleeping Beauty, it really went off in its own direction. Cinderella, I thought they knocked it out of the park on this one, not so much. But again, I don't think that's Emma Watson's fault. I feel that they were a little too slavish to the original story. They really should have stretched things just a little bit differently.
Now, I'm just curious, did you see the Jungle Book adaptation?
Yes.
And how did you feel about that one?
As far as a remake, I thought it did a better job of remaking the original source material than Beauty and the Beast did. Okay. It I mean, when you're remaking a movie, you can't say don't include elements, but it should feel like a fresh production. It shouldn't feel like you're looking at the storyboards from the movie. And yeah. I didn't feel that Jungle Book necessarily did that. I thought some of the scenes were in keeping with the story, but still very fresh and original, and not so much with this one.
This one, it seemed like they were making a point very early on of showing you exactly how much they were adhering to the original. And I thought that's why it was an interesting question to ask was, yeah, how much did they wind up really just doing frame for frame? I don't know if it would have been worse off for them or better off for them. At the end of the day, these are still basically money generators for Disney. So I think that they're going to have eyeballs on these along, you know, for a very long time.
Yeah, and Gaston's sidekick, if you will, was obviously meant to portray someone that's homosexual, and they really made him the butt of a lot of jokes. And I'm not sure how that. I mean, I'm not part of that community, but I'm not sure if it came across for someone who, in a sense, it's slightly representing. If that came across as just good, honest fun, or were they actually poking sort of dark humor at the person. I'm not quite sure. It seemed like it skirted the line a few times. So,
well, from what I understand, and I mean, there's a lot of controversy about that because there are some people who were against it just on general principle, which, you know, is not my take. Let's put it that way.
Yeah. Oh, no, I agree.
But there were also people who were like, but that's the character in the cartoon, right? In the original, the character was kind of the butt of jokes and so on. It was just they made it more obvious that his interest in Gaston was more, you know, on a personal level than it was necessarily communicated in the original animated version. I mean, there are some people who very obviously looked at the animated version and said, how can you not see this? But they made it, from what I understand, I haven't seen the film, but they made it more text versus subtext kind of thing. So that said, is this one of those things where they maybe... And I don't know, I'd love to hear other opinions about it from people within the community, but, you know, should they have made some adjustments in order to avoid some of that, you know, making it more, you know, almost derogatory to a certain degree? But
yeah,
again, I'm saying this secondhand. I don't know exactly. It was because I haven't seen the film yet, so, you know, I can't say what my opinion is. But it is interesting, though, because certainly... there are some other ones coming up as far as these adaptations are concerned. The one that really kind of throws me for a loop is The Lion King. I just don't know how that's going to work. Something there just is going to have to be very interestingly done.
Because, I mean, I've seen stage productions of it, and it's all done really well, but I don't know. Are they actually going to go with lions, or is it going to be just people in the similar position? I'm confused.
Yeah, a stage performance is perfectly fine because you know going in that it's going to be stylized because it's people portraying animals. I don't know that you can do it that way on live action. So I think actually I was kind of joking around with somebody. I really think it would be great if Jon Favreau just decided to make this a complete unexpected, almost like satire or something. I don't know if that's the word that you should use, but basically take stock footage of live animals and just have people do the lines of dialogue over it.
Where they manipulate the mouths or something. Yeah.
Just have like shots of a lion, and then in the background you're like Simba. You know?
Oh god!
It would be absolutely awful, but at the same time you'd be sitting back going, "Well,
that hurts.
They did the Lion King." all right. Let's see where you stand on our episode here. I think actually we're doing pretty well. So we're going to go ahead, wrap this one up, unless you have any other thoughts on either Logan or Beauty and the Beast.
Yeah, I'm glad to see Chrysler's making a quality automobile in 2049. Boy, that limo that limo held up to just about everything.
That thing held up better than Logan did through most of the movie.
I know. Anyway.
That's a very, very small point, but yes, a very good one. All right, we're going to go ahead and wrap this one up. When we come back next time, we're going to have a little bit of other discussion points and then get started with our episodic discussions. So until then.
And so ends another epic episode of The Critical Myth. If you want to leave a comment for this show, head over to vognetwork.com. Not only can you find links to the podcast version of each show, but there is a dedicated forum, a ton of written reviews and related articles by the crew throughout the site. For the written reviews, you can even leave your own review, so let us know if you agree or not. You can also leave comments on our Facebook page, Critical Myth, on Twitter at Critical Myth, or Google+, under the Critical Myth Show. Any and all use of copyrighted material is only intended for discussion, commentary, parody, or educational purposes, in accordance with U.S. Code Title 17, also known as fair use. In other words, please don't sue us. And of course, the statements and opinions of the Critical Myth crew are not necessarily those of the VOG network, its partners, or affiliates. But let's face it, we're probably right anyway. Until next time, watch, read, and listen, and believe in the Critical Myth.